This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Tell you, it's like the world turns with the Steelers and their quarterback situation. Welcome to the show. It's the Maggie and Perloff show. Perloff's on vacation this week, so EJ is sliding in for him. Manny's now producing. Alex is in. We're just shuffling around some chairs, but same show. So here's the thing about the Steelers quarterback situation. Mm-hmm. It feels like everyone's got agendas and everyone's got a preference. And it's a unique situation because normally you would think, well, who does the owner want? Whoever the owner wants, that's the preference. That's the agenda that wins out. But because you have such a respected coach in Mike Tomlin, I don't know if it's as cut and dry as just that. So here's some reporting that's coming out of Pittsburgh. According to some of the reporters like Jerry Dulock and guys who've been doing this for a long time, Dan Rooney, the owner, prefers Russell Wilson. Mike Tomlin prefers Justin Fields.
That's ideal.
And yeah, awesome. I wonder how this is going to go. And now add in another wrench to this with our pal Andrew Filippone, who works on The Fan in Pittsburgh, who's been on this show many times, who's reporting that internally there's also interest in Daniel Jones.
That's my boy.
Oh, not anymore. He's not, Manny. And so here's your like poo-poo platter of quarterbacks that you're looking at, allegedly.
Emphasis on poo-poo.
Exactly. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, and Daniel Jones. If I'm a Steeler fan, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me if this is where we're setting the bar with our quarterback situation.
This crap is crap.
Exactly. Truer words never spoken. And I know it's not so easy as snapping your fingers and saying, give me a franchise quarterback and moving on after Ben Roethlisberger. It's not easy, and they missed on Pickett. But here's the thing, EJ. You're in the AFC North, and I know you've got a great defense, maybe a championship-caliber defense. To go into this day and age NFL and think you're going to get over the hump finally with Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, or Daniel Jones makes you look like a delusional franchise. These are not guys who are going to be elevators. And that's what you actually need for this Steelers offense. This is not the Steelers offense of Plaxico Burress and Antonio Brown and, you know,
Santonio Holmes.
And these. You got George Pickens and Pat Freiermuth. Like,
that's it.
It's not going to work. And so you're basically asking a quarterback who's going to have to elevate unless you make some serious investments in terms of, you know, weapons and such.
Yeah.
You can't have like this game manager and think that you're going to be able to make the playoffs. Cool. That's not where the bar is for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's winning time. And none of these three quarterbacks would inspire a lot of, hope.
Oh, definitely not hope. But I think in a weird way, Daniel Jones may be the best option out of these guys. And here's why. Number one, if Arthur Smith is going to be the offensive coordinator, not someone I would have hired, but if he's going to be the guy, he had success with Ryan Tannehill, where I feel like if you squint, he's the closest thing to Ryan Tannehill than Fields or Russell Wilson are. Like, similar guys, first-round picks who didn't live up to expectations, but underrated athletes when Daniel Jones is right, which he hasn't been right in a while, but very good throwing the deep ball, something Tannehill was able to do with A.J. Brown. They basically were like, run with Derrick Henry 40 times, and when they put 9 and 10 in the box, play action, just throw the ball deep to A.J. Brown. That was all their offense, and it was successful. They won 13, 14 games playing that way. So I think if you're looking for any source of optimism, you say, well, this is probably Arthur Smith at his most comfortable at quarterback with this player. It's sad, but that's the reality. That's the way the Pittsburgh Steelers want to play, unfortunately. But I think there's another aspect to this that actually makes this even more enticing than that. This is your backdoor way to tank. Because at the end of the day, whether they want to do it or not, they may be stupid enough to not realize that Daniel Jones could be your tank commander. Like, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, you're playing a very tough division. You just finished in second place, so you're not talking about playing a last place schedule. You're going to have a tough schedule again next season.
Yeah.
I see a very clear scenario somehow where Daniel Jones goes out there, gets hurt after week 5, or is still inept because he's still coming back from all the injuries he's dealt with, and now you're dealing with a backup quarterback situation where the Pittsburgh Steelers wins 5 games. That's something that I think is on the table if Daniel Jones is their quarterback. And to be honest, that's what they need. They need to tank. They need to get in a position where they can get a true franchise guy. They're not going to be able to do it by continuing to win 9 games and being close to being contenders, but not really.
So never going to happen with Mike Tomlin, because I think this is a compliment to him. He's too good of a coach, and 5 wins is actually not going to be enough. Like, if you really want to get to the top 3, you got to be like 2-win, 3-win teams.
Well, right now you got 4-win team right now is the team that's number 1.
Okay, 5 wins, though, you could be picking 6th, 7th. Yep. I don't know if that's actually going to work for you in a way that you think. You're right, Daniel Jones might get hurt. I mean, that's been the thing his whole career. So you're going to be looking to bring in an asset that you're not even sure is going to make it through a full season. Like, here's my thing. If you're giving me these 3 guys and these are your options, then you might as well just go with Fields. I think he still has the biggest potential upside of anybody. He's already been in the system for a year. And you know, we're talking about other people's cast-offs now. And I still think that Fields, at least, you know, you did win games with him last year.
Yeah.
You got in a part of your schedule that was like a little bit easier, but still, like, you play who's on your schedule. And Russell Wilson came in, and all of a sudden the schedule got really, really hard. Yeah. And they finished the season on a 5-game losing streak. Mm-hmm. But Fields was able to win games. I just can't even, you know, this has been the lament for so many Steeler fans, is you're kind of just stuck in this mediocrity. And then I present these 3 quarterbacks to you, and it's like exactly the same. Now, I don't know if they'd be in the market for Stafford or for Aaron Rodgers or for Sam Darnold or anything like that, but you bring these 3 QBs, there's going to be some serious unrest. And, you know, if they're saying that the owner wants Russell Wilson, well, then it's going to be Russell Wilson. I think for as much respect as Mike Tomlin has in the building and for as much gravitas as he's earned, it's what the owner wants, right?
Which is why Mike Tomlin is wasting his time in Pittsburgh and why Pittsburgh's wasting their time with him. Like, I've been saying this for years. I don't understand how this breakup hasn't happened yet. Like, we know Mike Tomlin is not in a position to want to do a rebuild. We know the Steelers are desperate to need a rebuild. So what are we doing here? Like, Mike Tomlin would be a coveted head coach elsewhere, but he cannot win with the current way. I don't think he can win with the way they're trying to play football, quite frankly. This whole 3 yards and a cloud of dust thing is just not going to happen without dynamic offensive play. You're not going to be able to be good enough to tank. You're too good to tank. You're not good enough to really compete for a championship. So what are we doing? Like, you need to have a full rehaul of how you play Pittsburgh Steelers football in 2025. I don't know why he's still there. But to me, the lack of urgency in Pittsburgh, I think, is what's frustrating to people. I think even the biggest Mike Tomlin critics would feel like, yes, we understand he can win games with subpar talent. The problem is, his formula for winning is never going to get us a championship, which is what the Steeler, that's what the standard is.
So here's the thing about Mike Tomlin, though, and if you did want to move on with him, and this is a franchise that has 3 head coaches, so they're not going to do this lightly. Doesn't Mike Tomlin, isn't he partially, I don't say to blame, but where they are? Like, he does have this outsized influence. I don't think he and Omar Khan, the GM, are on equal footing at all. Yeah. And I think that it's like Mike Tomlin kind of got you, I don't say into this mess, because you do make the playoffs. It's not, you're not the Jets or something who's going through this all-time drought.
Yeah.
But you know, he's kind of gotten you here, I think, to a certain extent. So now he's just going to move on, or now you're just going to what, trade him to, yeah, to another team?
Yes. Get him out of there. This is what the Steeler fans deep down, they have been asking for, because Mike Tomlin keeps telling the fans that the standard is elite football, and they're not an elite football team. They haven't been an elite football team for 5 years, 6 years. I mean, yeah, they've been close to being one of these teams that we talk about as true championship contenders. So, yeah, I think you do move on from him and say, okay, we may take a one step back to eventually take three steps forward, because what they're doing right now isn't working. You got TJ Watt after the season being like, we need to have drastic change and I want to be a part of it, but we need to change things. And then I hear Daniel Jones and Russell Wilson.
Can you imagine? I wish we had a camera, a secret nanny cam or something on TJ Watt when he gets the news that internally they're looking at Daniel Jones. He must want to vomit. But Jeremy's in the chat who just said the Steelers are screwed.
Yeah.
Well said. Succinct. To the point.
Yeah, no notes.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 comment there. They are screwed. I don't see Tomlin also wanting to leave, and that's another reason. Here's why. You can't guarantee, say, the rate. Well, who would trade for him? I don't even. What does it matter?
I think Jess would have traded for him. Okay. But yeah, anybody.
I would say I'm retiring before I go to the Jets. But anyway,
yeah,
the money's still green.
Jeez, but Mags.
I'm sorry. The Jets are catching strays, but so be it. He's not going to have the same kind of influence in the front office. He's not going to have full run of the building. I don't think Mike Tomlin is going to have that, because the way the Jets operate, let's say we know a little bit about that organization because we live in this town, is the coach and the GM
are
two separate things, and they both equally like report to the owner.
Well, the Bears would have seemed like they had called, right? Is that right?
Yeah, the Bears may have called, but you know, they got Ben Johnson. They got the Mr. Cream of the crop. So right. I'm fading Ben Johnson. I don't know. He hasn't done anything
yet. I think Ben Johnson's going to go to Chicago and have a lot of say. I know that they have Ryan Poles there, and Kevin Warren is in a weird situation.
We'll see. We'll see. If he comes out and he wins 10 games the first year, Caleb looks great.
He is highly paid. For him to have all that money and not have any say would be surprising.
Yeah. I just don't know if Mike Tomlin can be guaranteed, you know, where he could go somewhere else and they're going to say, all right, here's the keys to the kingdom. Because you know what? What happens? Owner's kid gets involved. Owner's brother gets involved. You know, you got all these other dynamics that he knows. You know, every place is weird. I would say this about every office. Every place is weird, but the weird you know sometimes is like a little just more comfortable than the weird you don't know. Go work for the Giants and see what how weird the Maras are.
Yeah.
You know?
I get it.
So that's like the whole thing to me. I saw the Daniel Jones headline for the Steelers, and I almost just like threw my hands up in the
air. What would you do?
I said Darnold.
That's the guy, Darnold. Okay.
Darnold would be the aggressive move. Darnold to me doesn't seem like a Raiders quarterback. He doesn't seem like a Brady guy. I think Darnold, though, is like we saw outside of the last two games where he was terrible, he can elevate, I think, closer than Daniel Jones or Justin Fields can
elevate.
Yeah,
he's way more talented than those guys.
He's still young. And honestly, like, I think at least he solves your problem, and I don't think he's going to get $60 million a year. I really don't.
I respect Sam Darnold, but I feel like the Steelers always need a tough guy quarterback. And I look at Sam Darnold, I don't think tough. And that something, and playing in that division, playing in that weather, playing against the teams they play against, the identity, it feels like it would not be an identity fit to me.
855-212-4227. Talking about the Steelers, maybe interested in Daniel Jones. So there's your Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Daniel Jones triumvirate. Good luck to you.
We do not care.
Coming up next, we'll turn our attention to college football. Major changes could be on the horizon. Andy Staples from On3 will join us next. Don't move. Welcome back to the Maggie and Perloff Show. Perloff on vacation in Costa Rica, hopefully on a zip line somewhere. EJ Stewart slides in for Perloff. And, you know, anytime something big happens in college football, EJ, we like to turn to our pal Andy Staples. He is one of the smartest people talking about college football and covering the sport for On3. Andy, thanks so much for the time. How are you doing, sir? Well, I don't think Andy can hear me. And I gave him the big compliment, too.
Yeah, he.
So now I'm going to give Andy the compliment again, but I don't think he can hear us, guys. Well, let me update the audience.
I can't hear you. I think he hears us.
All right, Andy. I just said you're one of the smartest people I know talking about college football and covering college football. You see the report of some of the future potential changes that could be on the horizon for 2026, and I'll outline it for the audience quickly. And good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
The Big Ten and the SEC getting even more influence than they already have, potentially each conference getting four automatic bids. Big 12 would get two, ACC would get two, Notre Dame would get a bid if they're ranked in the top 14, and the group of five would get a bid, and then whatever else, everyone fights for the scraps. When you first saw this, what was your initial reaction?
Not surprised. They've been talking about this for quite some time. But really, we knew when the Big Ten and the SEC got to the size they are now, they were going to take over. The second they announced last year they were going to start to work together, mm-hmm. we knew they were going to take everything over. And it's interesting because the Big Ten was pushing the automatic bids, even back when they were putting the 12-team playoff together. And it was weird because when it was one automatic bid for the top five ranked conference champs, the Big Ten wanted to specify which conferences those bids were for. And like the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey, at that time was like, well, that's stupid. Who needs that? Because your champion's always going to get in, so who cares? But as this has gotten bigger and they had the first 12-team version, now you look at it and it's like, okay, the SEC would still like to move to nine conference games, but if that happens, they're going to beat each other up a little more. So you may have teams with three losses and you still want to get them into the playoff. And well, how do you do that? You just make everybody take them.
Yeah, Andy, you know, yesterday we were asking, though, our question to the audience, and we got very split responses, which is, should the SEC and the Big Ten have this much power in the future of college football? We know they do, but should they? Have they earned it? Because let's say last year, you know, where the SEC has an air quotes down year, or the future of college football where the talent is so much more spread out because of NIL and transfer portal, should they be able to run the sport in the way that it looks like they are and that they're going
to? You're looking at it through the prism of on-field success. That's not how it works.
Okay.
This is a pure golden rule issue. He who has the gold makes the rules. Yeah. And the Big Ten and the SEC have the largest fan bases. They have the most market share. That's why they have the power. It has nothing to do with what they've done on the field, even though they are the two best on the field as well. But even if they weren't, it wouldn't matter because they're the ones that control the audience, Andy, or at least the largest share of the audience.
Andy, one of the concerns I had, you know, full disclosure, I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan, so stumping for the ACC, is what we saw last year, throwing up to you, I love that. One of the things we saw last year, though, and it came really in the conversation about Indiana, a Big Ten team who played in the Big Ten, so in theory, you're playing against great teams. But then we saw in their schedule, you don't get Oregon. You don't get some of the heavy hitters. You don't get Penn State. What is the SEC or the Big Ten going to do about scheduling? Because not all SEC Big Ten games are created equal. How do you justify giving these teams automatic bids when they might not be playing the Alabamas and LSUs of the world in the SEC? Maybe you're getting Kentucky and Vanderbilt in the same year.
This is the biggest problem because the conferences have gotten too big. I'm working on a column about this very issue right now for On3, and I'm typing out the conference alignments as they were in 2010. Because if you look at them when they were in 2010, they're all the same size. They're all very regional. And if you had a thing where you said each of the top five conferences gets two automatic bids into a 14 or 16 team playoff, you'd look at it and go, okay, that makes sense. Because everybody played everybody. But now when you have these 18-team leagues, that's exactly the problem with the automatic bids. The schedule Indiana played is nothing like the schedule Oregon had to play. Like, Oregon had a much tougher road and actually wound up doing better with that schedule. Mm-hmm. But and then in the SEC, the schedule that Georgia and Florida had to play, much tougher than the schedule that, say, Missouri and Ole Miss had to play. So they've got to work on that, figure it out. The one thing, the SEC moving to nine games, I think, would help do that. The Big Ten is still a bigger disparity between the top and the bottom of the Big Ten, where you can draw a schedule that's a little bit easier like that. The SEC, I don't know that you can draw a schedule that's super easy, because there'll be situations where somebody, and I'll say this for Indiana's schedule last year. If we'd have been talking about Indiana's schedule this time last year, and you told me that they play at Ohio State and they play the two teams that played for the 2023 national title, I'm like, that's a pretty tough conference schedule.
Yeah.
But it didn't work out that way because Washington and Michigan weren't that good.
Andy Staples is joining us from On3. He's one of the smartest people writing and talking about college football, which is why we go to him when these big stories come out. And we got one a couple days ago. They kind of been in the works for a little bit, but sort of laying out what the future of the college football playoff could look like. Andy, I think for the fans, you know, the biggest critique that we heard after the first year of the 12-team college football playoff was just the blowouts, right? And how lopsided things were. You know, listen, it's sports. Like, it's not scripted. Blowouts happen. And this was only 1 year of it. So, but, like, that was the biggest gripe from the fans. I don't know if any of these...
Were they griping about the blowouts in the first round of the NFL playoffs?
Oh, they should have been. They should have been.
Equally as many blowouts.
Yeah, listen, again, it's professional and college sports. Like, this is why we watch, because we have no idea what's going to happen. Look what just happened to the Super Bowl, a blowout. But here's the thing. I wonder about these changes that are coming, 14 teams, 16 teams, more automatic bids for the SEC and the Big Ten. Does it help the competitive balance at all? Do you think that it will actually address what was at least the fans' biggest gripe, was that a lot of these games were lopsided?
I don't think that will. I think if they seed it correctly, I don't know if it'll eliminate blowouts, but it will not reward teams that lose a conference championship game like it did this year. Because the way the seedings were set up, for those who don't know, it's the top four seeds have to be conference champions. So in this situation, you got Boise State and the Mountain West champ was the three seed, even though they were the number nine team. And then you had Arizona State was the 12th ranked team, but they were the four seed.
Right.
So if you do that straight where you set it up and it's 1, 2, 3, 4, the teams that are ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, which would have been like the third seed in this case would have been Texas and the fourth seed would have been Penn State. That would make more sense, and I think it would work a little bit better because Penn State lost to Oregon in the Big Ten title game. Oregon's reward for that is having to play Ohio State first. Penn State, because the seedings were all jacked up, got a path where they got SMU at their place first, and then they got to go play Boise State in the quarterfinals. So they had the easiest path into the semifinals. Meanwhile, Oregon gets blown out by the eventual national champ because they wound up getting the toughest draw because Ohio State shouldn't have been seeded 8 in the first place. They should have been seeded 6th. So that's the part that they need to fix. I think they can fix that for next year. I don't think you got to wait till 2026 to fix that. But that would probably create more competitive games at the outset because you'd have some more light teams playing each other in the first round. And I think that would help the blowout part of it. But again, like if you look at the NFL playoffs this year, sometimes blowouts happen. You can't stop them.
One of the things that we talked about yesterday that was a concern for me about expansion was one of the strengths college football has is that every week feels massive. Every game is important. What every professional league is dealing with right now is a bloated schedule where it doesn't feel like week to week it matters. If you're in a situation where you have teams that are getting automatic bids, so much has been taken out of the committee's hands. Is college football in danger of their regular season being diluted, where the week-to-week drama that happens in college football isn't as important?
This is the part I find funny, because the automatic bids would actually increase the relevance of the regular season, if you think about it. Because you have to win in your conference to get an automatic bid. Well, how do you decide who's the second, third, and fourth place team in the conference? With the results of the regular season conference games. So I think that would probably make the games in October and November quite a bit more relevant than before, where you're just wondering what the committee is going to think. And the other piece of that, I think, is everybody said every week mattered back in the old system, whether it was the 4-team playoff or the BCS or even before that. No, they didn't. Most teams were out of the national championship hunt by the middle of October, and their games didn't matter at all to a national audience. So now, like last year, the Big 12 had 6 teams that could make the conference championship game going into the last week of the regular season. All of their games matter. And so I think that part of it, people are thinking of like the kick 6 where that ended Alabama's season. That's the one where Alabama tries to kick the field goal. Yep. Chris Davis from Auburn catches it and runs it back for a touchdown.
Sure.
That ended Alabama's season effectively. And you do lose that. So you lose the monumental gut punch, just like double over, I can't believe this happened, season's over thing. At least we thought. Because I remember watching Michigan-Ohio State last year. When Michigan beat Ohio State, I was like, holy crap, this is incredible. this was, there were three touchdown under. How did this happen? And so all of the range of emotions I would have had on any other Michigan Ohio State Saturday, Ohio State ended up winning the national title. Now maybe we get conditioned as the years go by to be like, oh, whatever, they just, you know, they'll be fine. But in that moment, it felt like the world had ended for Ohio State. So I don't know that it's as dramatic as people think it's going to be.
Andy, thanks for doing this. And just another couple minutes with you. And Andy Staples joining us from On3. Kind of turning our attention away from the future of how the college football playoff bracket is going to look. Unless there's something that we missed here that you think our audience should really know about.
I think you got it. Now, the one thing I will throw out there is this is an idea that I think Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti's been behind. If they do the automatic bids, one of the things they're talking about instead of conference championship games are these play-in games.
Yeah, I like
which
that.
I think would be kind of fun.
So if you like
the like the Big 12, if they've got two automatic bids, instead of just the top two teams getting them, you have essentially a mini tournament at the end of the season. One plays four and two plays three, and the winners of those games make the playoff. And you could actually do that in the Big Ten and the SEC as well. If they had, let's say they have four automatic bids, you say one and two, you're in, and then you have, you know, three play eight. I'm bad at math.
Three, six, and four, play five.
3, 6, and 4, 5. And the Big Ten could do the same thing, and those guys get in too. So those would create some big time high stakes games, and also keep the games, because what that's also kind of geared toward is that regular season where if you're in the fight for the sixth place spot in one of those leagues, you're still in it. Well, how many teams are going to be in striking distance of sixth place in November? Probably most of them. So I think that's what they're looking at for that. I don't know if they'll go to that. I think if they do 14, the Big Ten and the SEC are still going to do the 1-versus-2 championship game. Winner gets one of the two byes. But we'll see.
Andy, last one for me on this one. And again, thanks for your time today. Just turning ahead, right? We talked a little about Indiana and what a story they were last year. You can even say SMU. You know, what a story these sort of, I don't know, out of nowhere teams, but you know, ended up becoming major players on the national stage. Can you predict who's the next Indiana? Who's the next SMU? You know, now that the transfer portal window is closed, and I don't know if we're getting spring games anymore. Those may have gone the way of the dinosaur because everyone's afraid of getting their players poached. Who could be the next Indiana?
I don't know if it's fair to call in the next Indiana, but we're all predicting Illinois is going to have a big year. But Illinois had a really good year last year. Illinois won 10 games last year. So, but they brought back almost all of their best players, and in some cases it was a surprise to them because there was a ruling, like the Vanderbilt quarterback sues to see if he can get another year of eligibility. He gets an injunction. He gets another year of eligibility. All of a sudden, Illinois' left tackle can come back instead of having to go to the NFL. And it's like, oh, okay, this is different. But so Illinois would be the team I would watch. Their schedule's not the easiest in the world, but they are a team I think could potentially make the college football playoff.
Yeah, they're awesome. Just ask Brett Bielema. He'll tell you exactly right. How great they are.
Yeah, he's trying to fight Shane Beamer in the bowl game. I mean, listen, it's always an adventure with Brett.
Yeah, an elite Twitter troll, along with being a very talented head coach. Andy, again, thank you for the time, making this a little bit easier to digest for all of us. And we appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
And we'll have to talk SEC hoops another time, Andy, because I like the toast of college basketball.
No, how about dominance? How about those Gators?
I know. Andy's Gators.
I know.
Number one. And two, is the SEC a basketball conference now? I know they've been steadily climbing, but this has been pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's funny. There was a kind of a weird, like, insider industry argument happening on social media about whether college basketball is boring. And what I would tell folks is if you're watching maybe Big Ten teams slug it out or Big East basketball where there's elbows and bruises, maybe you watch SEC basketball, it's like watching a mini NBA.
Yeah, they're scoring in the 80s.
They're scoring the hundreds. Like, yeah. Alabama and Kentucky were trying to break the scoreboard earlier this season. I mean, those games are really exciting. And Florida is one of those teams. Great guard play, elite defensive play at the rim. Like, this is going to be a fun NCAA tournament once people start to get familiar with some of these teams in the SEC.
Let's turn to Pat Boyle, who's got headlines for us on this very busy Wednesday. What's up, Pat?
Hey, what's going on? Some of the other NFL news we didn't get to last hour. So as free agency looms, first step towards that began yesterday. The franchise tag and transition tag window And there's a handful of big-name players that are up for it, including Vikings QB Sam Darnold, who would cost $40 million to franchise tag and play this next season in Minnesota. Chiefs standout guard Trey Smith, Dolphins safety Javon Holland, some of the others. But probably none are more important than Bengals receiver T. Higgins, who played the 2024 season as well under the franchise tag, had a career-high 10 touchdowns in just 12 games. So Tom Pelissero reported on Monday the Bengals are aiming to get a long-term deal done with Higgins before the March 4th deadline. But considering how many mouths Cincinnati has to feed, Ja'Marr Chase up for an extension on the last year of his rookie contract, so is first-team All-Pro pass rusher Trey Hendrickson, there's a chance it doesn't get done. Franchise tag on Higgins this year would cost $26 million. So where can they save some money? Enter Joe Burrow. And I'll resurface a clip from last week with Burrow on Part of My Take talking about how he himself can help out.
So you could do a couple different things. You could convert some of the money to a signing bonus, okay, which will lower the cap hit.
Mm-hmm.
You can push some of the money to the back end of the contract,
mm-hmm,
and then when you get to the, that lowers the cap hit, and then when you get to the back end of the contract, you can restructure it and convert it to a signing bonus.
Okay.
And then you can also just take less money.
And which one were you going to do?
We'll see.
But I love how Big Cat's just like humming him the whole time. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like Joe's putting on a masterclass and just like and cap management, but you know, this is why, EJ, you said this is the team, the Bengals, have the most do or die offseason.
Yeah.
Because of all these question marks that are up in the air, I just think they got to stop lying to Joe Burrow. They're not signing all these guys. I don't think they are. I don't believe that they will. And two, I don't even know if it's smart to have this much money wrapped up in basically four players when you got a 53-man roster, even for as talented as these guys, yeah, are. Did you guys happen to see, though, T. Higgins' mom weighed in? Her name's Camilla Stewart.
I don't think a relation, but maybe. Actually, I do have a lot of family in South Carolina.
If there is, you better start getting some of that money.
I know. I got to make some phone calls to my dad.
She went to social media and posted Monday night a caption that said, selfish. I don't even know. Can I say this on the air?
Bastards?
Yeah. Can I say that? Can I spell it? Yeah. I already know I can't spell curse words. People already told me that about that.
That was a classic Maggie Broloff moment.
Honestly, I wasn't sure. I didn't know that you couldn't just spell out nicknames for woman's anatomy. I didn't think that would get me in trouble with the FCC, but apparently it does.
Well, with
everyone
Bilotti,
else, by the way, knew that that was the case.
With Bilotti, if you said ass, he would probably dump it.
Yeah, he's a little more conservative. But
quick trigger.
Selfish bastards is what she put on social. Mm. So things are going
How
great.
How dare you say that?
What?
Bastards.
I mean, tell us how you really feel.
Are the Bengals? I didn't understand that. That being the takedown of the Bengals. Selfish?
That they're not giving him the long-term deal yet?
What's selfish about not wanting to pay T. Higgins?
Well, because they're not giving him any security.
Right, but selfish suggests that you're thinking only about yourself.
Right. That's the organization is.
But what if they're thinking about the organization? They feel like it doesn't make sense for them to put all their eggs into just a four-man basket.
I think that she's got to go to the Joe Burrow School of Cap Management now. I don't know. But she's looking out for her son.
Well, and as good as Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow are, she probably feels her son, and rightly so, is a valuable, critically valuable piece of that offense.
Yeah, listen, the wide receivers are getting $30 million a year right now. What else is going on, Pep?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just going to say, Burrow has publicly applied pressure many times to the Bengals front office to keep this core together, but, you know, maybe might want to put some pressure on himself to help out the cause. Another guy who could get tagged but is unlikely, Bucs receiver Chris Godwin. The Bucs and Godwin are working on a new contract that would keep him in Tampa Bay, but according to Greg Allman of Fox Sports, they have agreed to change his old contract so that it doesn't void until the end of the league year on March 12th. So this gives them some more time to get a deal done, but he could also get tagged by March 4th.
How much money did that guy lose, by the way?
Yeah.
Off that Todd
Bowles. And he's already been tagged twice, so this would be the last time he could get tagged. And he was on pace for career best in receptions, yards, and touchdowns before that gruesome ankle dislocation.
Yep. Man, and that was stupid, right?
Yeah, they left him in the game, and the game was essentially over. And
he got hurt.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this, and I'm like, Chris Godwin maybe would have gotten a nice bag. He was having a really good season.
Oh, yeah.
And at his age, I feel really terrible for him. Hopefully they can get something. Hopefully they take care of him because he's done a lot for the organization.
Do you remember, this is coming back a couple years, when this happened with the Seattle Seahawks? And who was it who ends up getting carted off the field and they were in a contract year?
Earl Thomas.
Yep, and he flipped off Pete Carroll. That's an all-time moment.
Because it's like, I was supposed to get paid. You guys told me, play one more season, basically, and then...
And we'll take care of you. And then he got a devastating injury, and he literally gave him the bird on his way on a cart leaving the field.
No friends in business, especially the NFL business.
That's
true. Real quick, last thing. NBA returns tonight. Lakers, Hornets in LA. Makeup game from early January with the Wildfires. LeBron questionable with the foot injury. But speaking of, so Netflix docuseries called Court of Gold came out yesterday. Follows Team USA en route to the gold medal at the Paris Olympics. And former President Obama narrates part of the series. There's 6 episodes, and in one of them, the guys seem to be at some kind of dinner or a cocktail hour, and you have Anthony Edwards and Embiid walk in, and Obama starts talking to Ant.
What do you think about this young guy? He can hoop a little bit, huh?
Just a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I better stand down. I'm the truth.
He said he's the truth. Yeah?
B-boy, no.
So he says to Embiid, how about this young fella? He can hoop. And Anthony, you better stand down. I'm the truth. Imagine that to the former president.
No.
Everybody keeps saying, like, Anthony Edwards' confidence through the roof. He basically goes on to tell Obama, he's like, stop talking.
But this is the one thing that you can kind of appreciate. And I think why Anthony Edwards is a big star and will he be even a bigger star. He's the same no matter what room he's standing in. Like, the fact that you're standing in front of a former president, you do not change your demeanor one bit. You don't button it up just a little bit more, or maybe, I don't know, like tone it, dial it back.
In a world where everyone feels like we're being sold something, or everyone is phony, or everyone has some angle, he's one of the few athletes, a few stars that feels very authentic.
Yeah.
And to be honest, in some ways, it's getting them in a little trouble, I think.
That's true.
In terms of some of the
couple
stuff
text messages
off the field and whatever, off the court. But that authenticity is why people love him so much. Like, it doesn't matter if he was talking to Barack Obama or some dude in the Atlanta barbershop. He was going to give him the same confidence because that's just who he is.
So do you think Obama appreciated that? Because I could see from his side of it, you're a former president. People probably act pretty phony around you. Like, I remember they always had the stories about the pickup basketball games that they used to have at the White House. And Obama liked to play. But no one's going to, like, hard foul.
Yeah.
The president of the free world, but you'd have to be first of all, you'd never get invited back. But I wonder if there's part of this that Obama might like, because your life's got to be so curated when you're the president.
Oh yeah, and like the amount of young people he probably gets involved with are probably he probably name on one hand. Right?
Although he's got his daughters,
right? But I mean, they're the daughters.
The truth to the president.
They're the daughters of a president. Like how often are they going to be bringing around, are they bringing around 10, 15 people for house parties? I don't imagine that. I imagine whatever they're doing is going to be off campus, so to speak.
Yeah.
I think he was taken aback. There's another clip, we don't need to hear it, but he's like, LeBron, come over here, LeBron. And then he basically like asks him to check Ant, and LeBron goes, he's the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
See, what did he do? He called the oldest guy in the room and said, who's 40? You, LeBron, come here.
I've got something in common with you.
Yeah, exactly.
LeBron, I must tell you, you must check Anthony Edwards.
Oh, man, he's got an Obama.
Yes, I do. It's a lot with the hand movement as well.
Yeah, with the thumb.
Yeah,
the thumb.
Gotta be watching on the YouTube stream.
Thumb's very important. Thumb's
my fellow
important
Americans.
Yeah.
Just the other day, I had the pleasure of speaking to Anthony Edwards.
We're getting there, Manny. Got to be like Sasha Malia.
I mean, look, it's better than Perloff trying to be a Scottish soccer player or whatever he's been trying to do.
Michelle Obama.
Manny's like a chameleon compared to Perloff. Manny's one of the great actors of our generation compared to
Perloff. My name is Jeff.
Perloff's
Manny Caliendo back then.
Yeah. Perloff's Cam Smith.
Todd.
Yes, this is Mel Kiper. Pat, thank you for that. Coming up, lots more to do, including got to check in on the Cowboys. Who's talking? Micah Parsons. Shocker. What do you have to say? We'll tell you next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
You know that sound? Time for our Cowboy Quickie. Update on the latest with Micah Parsons speaking to Cowboys.com about his contract negotiations. He said, it's good. It's good. I really have a lot of respect for Jerry. We have great conversations all the time. There's definitely a plan in place, but we'll just see how everything plays out. There's been no progress yet, but I'm pretty confident that something will happen. So we'll see. End of quote. I can save Micah Parsons a couple months of agony. Pencil in like 2 days before the season starts, and that's when you're going to sign. So decide whether or not you're going to be a hold in or a hold out, and just make your arrangements. You could go Ezekiel Elliott, maybe working out on the beaches of Cabo. Uh-huh. Maybe you do a CeeDee Lamb, you stay away, working out in Florida, wherever he was, or Dak Prescott, who you just sort of hang around. You've got a few models here of how to get one over on the Joneses. So just figure out what avenue you want to take, and we'll see you in September.
Yeah, make no Waffle House bets. You will get your money, but it just will take some time. The one thing I will say about this is I feel like this may be the one negotiation that actually gives Jerry headaches. I know every negotiation has basically gone the same. He takes his sweet-ass time and does something at the last second, or just doesn't. Like, he just let Mike McCarthy just walk. Micah Parsons is not Dak Prescott. He is not CeeDee Lamb. He's going to find a camera. He's going to find a microphone. He's going to talk about this. He's going to talk about this a lot. And I think if this gets contentious, which it could if he gets impatient, this is going to cause some problems for Jerry Jones. I think that this is the one guy they'd be better suited to just give him the money, move on, and then just have a nice day.
Well, that's your Cowboy Quickie. Now, there's another part, though, of when you talk a lot, which Jerry does and Micah does, and it can get you into trouble sometimes. Because I can remember going back to a long ago time called December, when Micah Parsons also said that he wants the team to be attacking free agency in a way that the Philadelphia Eagles do, right? Mm-hmm. So does that mean you're taking less money? Does that mean you're going to leave a little bit? Because Dak didn't, CD didn't.
Yeah.
They're both getting top of the market. Dak literally highest paid in terms of annual average annual value for a quarterback. He's taken everything. CD took everything, and I'm not begrudging him that. And Micah could take every penny. Sure. It's totally his right. He's played so well that he deserves to be the highest paid pass rusher. But then can you turn around to the organization and say, oh, and also trade for Myles Garrett, then pay him. Do this, that, next. Bring T. Higgins in. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it would be, but you know, at some point, like the Joneses are going to say, hey, that's a cap issue, and we can only afford what we can afford. It's kind of the same thing we're talking about with the Bengals, about how they're going to try to figure out Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Trey Hendrickson, and maybe a restructure for Burrow. Like, the Cowboys are kind of swimming in similar waters here.
In many ways, the Philadelphia Eagles are the worst thing that happened to all these other guys trying to get money, because those guys watched Jalen Hurts get a massive bag. They watched A.J. Brown just sign a contract, then just get another one. It seemed like just for being alive, just for breathing. I don't know why they signed him this offseason, but he apparently wanted more money. They said, all right, here you go. And in some ways, the Niners are kind of in the same
way, too. Smith also got paid.
Right, Devontae Smith got paid. I mean, they paid everybody. And then in the Niners on the West Coast, they've kind of also been that same thing. Oh, okay, you want money, you know, Christian McCaffrey? Here, sure, go have a great wedding.
Amador Lenore, here's $100 million.
Here's all his money. Yeah. So they've seen some of these teams float the model of how to get around the salary cap situation and still pay your stars. So I don't think Mike Parsons is going to think at all about he has to take a pay cut. He said, why? I watch other guys get top dollar, and those teams still fielded, you know, dream teams, essentially.
Yeah, well, there's a difference, though, between, to me, what the Philadelphia Eagles do and what at least definitely the Cowboys, 49ers, I think, are a little bit more of a mixed bag. The Eagles pay everyone way early.
That's true.
And sometimes it bites them. They paid Carson Wentz after 3 years, and they ended up having to eat a lot of that contract.
I mean, so, the Hurts contract looked bad until this postseason,
until this
quite
season,
frankly.
Right. And then before, he couldn't get along with Sirianni, and, like, is he elite? We're still asking, is Jalen Hurts a top five quarterback, top 10, whatever. But they pay everyone early. That's their thing. We don't see any contract stuff going on with them. And the Cowboys are the opposite. They drag everything out. The Bengals drag everything out. And you reap what you sow, which is, you know, the market gets reset, and then you find yourself having to top it. So, yeah, I'm pretty fascinated about what's going to happen with Micah Parsons. I think mostly because of what you're saying, which is this guy will say whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So it just add, like, Dak will always kind of play CEO quarterback.
Yeah, they're company men.
Yep.
Yeah, and Dak, CD, Mike McCarthy, those guys are company men. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. They're going to just do whatever. You know, Dak Prescott said, I don't even listen to what Jerry Jones says. I think he kind of knows there's no benefit to, like, putting more fuel on the fire. Jerry's got plenty of smoke for himself. So that's not Michael Parsons, so I just wonder, like, does this become, I know I mentioned the Cowboys being irrelevant, but I think this might be a offseason of fireworks because Michael Parsons will not talk.
Well, and I think there's another part where the rest of the league, I think, is waiting for just a crack.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, everyone's kind of like waiting, all right, is there going to be a little bit of a fissure here? Is there a way that we can elbow our way and get into the door and try to get a guy like Michael Parsons, who, you know, is so incredibly talented?
I think if the Cowboys were smart, they would seriously consider trading him. And it has nothing to do with him as a talent. I just look at their team, look at their inability to maneuver the cap, because whether teams can maneuver the cap well or not, they're clearly not one of them.
Right.
So when they have guys to pay, they can't figure out how to get anybody else. Is a nucleus of Michael Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, Dak Prescott going to win you anything? No. So I look at that and I say, man, this guy is definitely the best player, in my opinion, of those three guys. You can get a massive haul, and maybe you could really rebuild that offense. Maybe you get some guys in the secondary or some linebackers so you don't get run over all the time. I think there's an opportunity there potentially to maybe restart a Dallas rebuild that can happen really quickly if you trade Michael Parsons.
Herschel Walker trade 2.0.
There you go.
Could happen. 855-212-4227. It's Wednesday coming up. We got a great debate. We got a doozy for you. Don't move.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.